Now, Julian Whitehead is one of New Zealand's most prolific and distinguished composers. In a career spanning 40 years, she's produced a body of work which includes operas, large orchestral pieces, choral and chamber music. In 1999, she was awarded the New Zealand Order of Merit. Well, she spent 14 years abroad, and since her return, she's been involved in several works using Maori instruments. Her latest, scheduled to come here in 2008 and recently recorded on CD, is a piece about whales played with indigenous instruments made from whale bone. It's called Spouting to the Skies. Well, Candida Beveridge met her at a performance of the piece in Wellington, played by the New Zealand String Quartet and the flautist Richard Nunns.
Well, I think it was really, really beautiful in the way that you could visualise the whales, and I just think the beautiful bone playing and the strings and things just melted beautifully into each other. I could hear water, and I could just see the whales sort of talking. Really stunning piece, I think.
I could not believe that a viola could sound like a whale. And, dear, I'm very moved indeed.
Oh, I was really quite emotionally overcome by it, really. Very elemental.
I think she's an outstanding composer. And I think she has a number of qualities that really make her probably one of our greatest living composers in New Zealand.
Elizabeth Kerr has had a long association with Gillian Whitehead, both in her role as manager of the New Zealand String Quartet and as a musicologist.
She has this ability to move us and to touch us and to take perhaps a universal topic and bring it to us, but also she is a wonderful musical architect.
I was going to write a piece for Richard and the String Quartet, and I'd written a number of pieces that had to do with Maori goddesses, but I felt for this one I wanted to do something different, and it was the day that the International Whaling Commission decided it was okay to start whaling again, or looked as though it was going to be like that. And I was also thinking that Richard has this wonderful array of instruments made from whalebone, and I thought, well, why not write a piece that celebrates whales?
Cellist of the New Zealand String Quartet, Rolf Jeltsen.
Her music is very spiritual, and in this case, she's almost getting into the soul of the whale through this piece. The role of the cello sometimes is a whole pod of whales, so it's very dramatic and energetic. And other times it's extraordinary sounds of the sea or nature or maybe the spiritual, inner spiritual voice of the whale.
I just think they're wonderful, mysterious creatures, and I listened a lot to recordings of whale sound, and it's the range of their song. I mean, they have these very deep, sonorous notes, and the harmonics that spark off those will go right above our range of hearing. And it was perhaps a wish to just experiment with sound in a different way.
First violinist Helena Pohl.
She draws on some very deep place in herself to write the music, and she's almost embarrassed to talk about it, but then it did help us when she told us that this was the seal sliding down and this is the whale traveling through the ocean, and that's very fun to play.
The whalebone flutes used in Puhaka Kitarangi are part of a collection of 90 newly created Maori instruments called tangaporo, which means singing treasures. 20 years ago, only a handful of these precious indigenous instruments existed, locked in display cases in museum collections around the world. Flautist Richard Nuns.
The instruments fell away throughout the 19th century and were collected and gathered and taken away overseas by and large. A few were hidden and many were broken. We find them being played in ritual and ceremonial situations. I keep repeating this crass metaphor as a cell phone to the divine. They were what dialed up the deity, as it were.
Richard Nuns is largely responsible for the renaissance of these instruments. Along with carver Brian Flintoff and Maori composer Dr. Hirini Melbourne, he set out to recreate the instruments and take them back to the communities from which they came. At first they were met with blank faces, but as the instruments began to sing, fragments of knowledge about their use came into being.
Suddenly we were being approached by particularly elderly women, kuya, at the end of any session, who would be crying with excitement or sadness and be holding you and stroking you and saying, "Oh, I remember those sounds."
No instrument will have been made from a whale that's been harmed in any way. They are all from whales who've beached in the central part of New Zealand.
Legally, whalebone belongs to the government, but because of its special significance in Maori mythology, when a whale is beached, the local Maori community are the first to be informed. Carver Brian Flintoff explains why.
The whales are the oldest children of the sea god Tangaroa and are very special. Their stranding is acknowledged as being a gift from the sea god. So removing the bones from the whale and making special things from them is a huge honour that is not lightly bestowed by Māori.
Using whalebone instruments to represent whales musically gives Gillian's work great integrity.
Particularly the fact that one of the instruments is made of the cochlea of a whale, so what the whale used to receive sound is now being made a way of sending the sound back into the world again, which I found fascinating.
Gillian's great-grandmother was a Maori, and it's been through these traditional instruments she's been able to articulate her Maori past.
I suppose it is my Maori heritage that is something that has attracted me to the sounds of the instruments. The variety of sounds from them is very powerful. It's a very spiritual sound.
And given her Maori ancestry, Elizabeth Kerr says it's perhaps no coincidence she's so musically gifted.
The interesting thing about Māoridom is that if you look back in history, the significant Māori composers over several centuries were women.
Composing for indigenous instruments is very different from writing for traditional Western instruments.
The tangapuro do have very small ranges, maybe the range of a minor third or perhaps a fourth, but they also have, you know, they have the ability to slide between pitches and use microtones so that there is a great variety of pitch that and sound that can come from one instrument. And by using a range of instruments through the piece, you get quite a range of tone colour as well as pitch.
For compositions like Puhaki Kitarangi, she allows for as much improvisation as possible.
Can you play it the second way again?
Can we also go...
The string quartet parts are notated throughout. Richard much prefers to play free of any notation.
I'm left with creative holes, as it were, in which I improvise. We spend time discussing and talking about the shape of what she wants. She chooses an instrument, but essentially it becomes a collaborative activity that is to a degree different every night that it's played and performed.
One, okay. So we come in.
I also involve the string quartet in improvisation along with him. So that extends their range of involvement in the piece. And I think after a while it becomes a bit difficult to tell what's improvised and what's notated.
Gillian's is a unique voice. We're very thrilled that in this part of her life she's come back to New Zealand. There was a time perhaps when New Zealand might have thought that she was a great New Zealand composer but an expatriate, and now she's here with us and composing about New Zealand, drawing on her Māori heritage, picking up themes that are important to New Zealanders in the music, and that's a wonderful thing.